This is basketball culture with Penny Green. It's more than just a game. It's a culture. You're killing them, Slim. You're killing them.
Basketball culture.
The champion in you.
Hello, my global basketball community. It's your boy, Penny Green. And I'm pleased to be with you. And we're getting ready to give you an exciting show. The show today is The Game Is Not the Same. So all you old school guys, you know what I'm talking about. But before we jump into the show, I want to give you my resume real quick. Because if you ever watch ESPN or any of the top sports shows, they always put a little caption telling you a little bit about the guy doing the talking. So just so you know I'm qualified to do this, I'm going to give you a quick resume. First of all, grew up in Washington, D.C., Southeast. And then my mother moved us to West Baltimore, the village. And if you grew up in the area, you know, they built nothing but soldiers in those neighborhoods. Landed in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. And my mother saw the writing on the wall. So she got me out that environment. And it was a great thing. It was a breath of fresh air. As a young man, my mother saw my passion for the game of basketball. And she got me in a camp. And that camp was with Tom Young, Chuck Daly, Tom Davis. I went to Lefty's camp. I was under the tutelage of Will Jones. So all these guys touched my life as I was becoming a ball player and starting to learn the skill sets. And all these guys end up in Hall of Fames. So as I look back on, I was very blessed to learn the game of basketball from these gentlemen. When I landed in the suburbs of Washington, Greenbelt, Maryland, I hooked up with a bunch of guys, started playing with them on a regular basis. And as a ninth grader, I saw them go up against the mighty St. Anthony's, John Thompson, on an 18-game win streak, number one in the country. And believe it or not, they pulled off the upset. They had a kid named Mickey Corbin out of Greenbelt, the youth center. I used to play with him on a regular basis. So it gave me a lot of confidence and made me feel real good about myself that the guys I was playing with on a regular basis just upset the number one team in the nation. You know, builds confidence. From there, I was fortunate to play for Parkdale High School. Stan Kernan was the coach. He's actually in the Hall of Fame in Louisiana, and he's an icon legend in Washington, D.C. His high school team won 38 in a row. So he was a stickler on fundamentals. You know, you had to see the ball in the man. You know what I mean? It was about passing. He just was all about understanding basketball and the intelligence that goes with basketball. So I was fortunate. He actually gave me the green light, or I should say I took the green light, because basically once you start shooting and making it, there's no reason to stop. So I got the green light. I did my thing. I averaged 25-7, second leading score in the area. Shot 48 from the field, 80 from the free throw line. So nothing but box of ones, triangle and twos. So I had a really successful high school career. I was on the cover of the Washington Post sports section, which high school players never get that honor. So yeah, it was a wonderful experience. I now start getting recruited by John Thompson, Hall of Fame, John Thompson. Okay. And I end up with Bill Gibson, ACC Coach of the Year in 72. So my game was at that level where I had the best coaches in America looking at me as a player. I show up at the University of South Florida with Bill Gibson. Bill had all the personality. He just was a super guy. Passed away my freshman year, unfortunately. But my sophomore year, we went 19-8 and actually were the... That record was the best winning percentage in the school's history for 50 years. Excellent schedule, one of the most powerful schedules in the country, and we did our thing, and I developed as a player. My senior year, I played with four freshmen. We went to the Sun Belt Conference Championship and shocked everyone. Unfortunately, one game short of the big dance, NCAAs, the big dance, one game short, but ended up in the Hawk camp in 79 with Hubie Brown. Anybody who knows Hubie, Hubie was a no-nonsense New York Brooklyn guy. He would cuss you out on the drop of a dime. He was a little nutty, to be honest with you, but I liked him. And so played against the best players in the world. That kind of tells you a little bit about my basketball background and why I think I'm qualified. From that, I fell in love with the game as far as my passion. I created a website, dcbasketball.com, which is a comprehensive Wikipedia-type online museum, virtual online museum about the history of Washington. So I'm proud of that. And then from there, I ended up in the D.C. Basketball Hall of Fame Committee. We have an event once a year at the Bethesda Country Club, very prestigious. So that was a great experience. And then I was fortunate to be in the Kevin Durant documentary on Showtime, Basketball in the Water. I had 4 appearances, a couple voiceovers. So that just kind of built up my away from basketball experience. And lastly, I like to say, you know, for a guy who just turned 70, I still go to the gym. Okay, I play 21, which you guys know it's like jailhouse basketball. No fouls are called, very physical. Young people don't like to see old people do things to them. And I definitely do things, okay? So at 70 years old, I'm 190. In college, I was 185. So I'm disciplined and I'm not on any of those, you know, weight loss products. You know, this comes from discipline, okay? So I say all that to say, I put in over 10,000 hours studying the game, playing the game. So that qualifies me to talk about the game. You with me? So here we go.
A man came up to me one day and said, "What does it take to be a great basketball player?" I said, "Main man, it takes 10,000 hours to master the game of basketball. 3 hours a day for a little over 9 years on that asphalt and that hardwood. Thousands of quiet mornings working those fundamentals. And just as many late night battles against bloodthirsty ballers who live for the bump. It's just you and your heart out there, grinding when nobody's watching and when nobody cares. Talent helps, sure, but your skill set is the real measure of your game. And the window of opportunity, it's only open for a few years before it closes, before the world tells you your playing days are over. That's a lot of pressure on a brother. The last thing you want to do is look back in time and talk about what I could have done, what I would have done. Because you don't learn this game from talking about it or dreaming about it. You learn it from winning and losing, from getting crossed up, getting jade on, and in some cases, getting bullied. But by standing strong with your manhood being challenged, and what happens is your desire to win becomes absolute. The mastery of this game is forged in the shadows, earned long before the newspapers and the bright lights ever know your name. This is Basketball Culture with Penny Green. Respect my steps.
The game is not the same. A lot of the guys that I know and came up with, they call me and say, "I can't even watch the game. Did you see the game last night?" I can't watch it. One thing I learned is a lot of old school guys, they're heartbroken. You know what I mean? Their heart's broken. And because basketball is such a big part of their lives, you know, they grew up playing it, coaching it, you know, and passing it on to the next generation. You know, they love the strategy, the physicality, the teamwork, the fundamentals, the discipline, you know, of basketball over the decades. So when they watch today's game, they feel that the sport that they fell in love with has changed so tremendously. And then it becomes difficult and painful to watch. And some guys might even say it's been butchered. You know what I mean? That's an extreme, but, you know, I get it. I feel their pain, for real. They take it really personal. The changes in the game, they take personal. They love the old school player, and fans feel about That's how the old school players feel about the game of basketball. They just love it so much. The game they devoted their lives to and has evolved into something they barely can actually recognize. The issue is not the players. The issue is the style of play, the emphasis on entertainment, and the way the game has changed over the decades. So, yeah, I get it. It's different. It's different. So when we go back in time and go back in retrospect, the 70s, okay, that's when I started getting involved in the game. There was guys like Oscar Robertson, you know what I mean? He was going to beat you with basics, fundamentals, you know, angles, balance, footwork, timing. He was strong. He'd back you down, head fakes. That's what coaches really were looking for back in the day. That's the kind of ball players they were looking for. Then all of a sudden, the ABA came along. You had all this flamboyant, you know, guys with style, you know, and the coaches were starting to let you do a little more of your play through your personality, let your personality show up on the floor. Players played with a little more style and swag as we went into the early 70s. Guys like Pete Maravich had the floppy socks. He was throwing behind the back passes from 94 feet away and hitting you like right in your hands. You had Walt Frazier wearing big brims, driving Rolls Royces on the cover of, you know, fashion magazines. There was Dr. J flying through the air with his afro fluttering in the air as he dunked on you. You know what I mean? It was George Gervin, the Iceman, tippy-toeing around the court, throwing finger rolls from the free throw line. He wasn't even sweating. You know what I mean? And then he'd look at you and laugh. Okay? Calvin Murphy, 5'9", you know, energetic. You know what I mean? Could shoot the lights out, shoot the leather off the ball. Everybody talk about Steph Curry and his dynamic, you know, shooting ability. Best shooter in the world, you know, all time. But Calvin Murphy shot 95.8 from the free throw line. And I'm going to double check, and y'all can check me, but I don't think Curry ever shot 95.8. But I could be wrong. We need to double check that stat. But these are the kind of guys I grew up watching. Archie Clark with the crossover, before Tim Hardaway, before Isaiah Thomas, before Pearl Washington, who started the crossover. Archie Clark was doing it in the 70s, breaking ankles. And then lastly, my guy was Earl the Pearl Monroe. They called him Black Jesus, okay? Jesus. So Earl had the spin dribble, put you in the spin cycle, and he had the herky jerky, head fakes, you know what I mean? Barely jumped off the floor, give you 35 with his eyes closed. In college, he averaged 41. I was fortunate enough to meet Earl. I was working at the University of Maryland selling Coca-Colas. The Washington Bullets were transitioning from Baltimore to Washington. I show up at the locker room. Boop, 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 boop. What can I do for you, kid? Gus Johnson, what can I do for you, kid? I want to speak to Earl Monroe, sir. He said, hold on. Magic, come here, Magic. Young boy want to talk to you. All of a sudden, Earl comes out. How can I help you? I said, Mr. Monroe, I just want to say hello to you. I aspire to be like you one day. Gives me some conversation, shows me some love. You know, goes back in the locker room. I'm getting it together, getting ready to leave. I see him coming walking out, very majestic. I saw two young ladies sitting on the wall. He grabs each lady, one on one elbow, the other one on the other elbow. And I wasn't sold on basketball before that. I was sold after seeing him walk off into the sunset with the two most beautiful women I ever seen in my life. So that was the evolution of personalities coming through in the game of basketball. And let's also understand, every generation thinks that their generation of basketball is the best, you know? And, you know, guys call me up and heckle me, young guys, they call me up and tell me how the skills, the athleticism is so tremendous, and guys in the past with skills couldn't play with today's players. Bob Cousy was all right. He couldn't play with the guys today. Bill Russell couldn't play. They go down the list of guys in the old days who couldn't play with the guys today. I say, when it comes to the game of basketball, if you're fat, I've seen fat boys kill. If you're skinny, I've seen skinny boys kill. I seen guys you knew they were going right, couldn't do nothing about it. Guys you knew were going left, you couldn't do anything about it. If you can play the game, you can play the game. I don't care what your size, what you look like. If you can play, you can play. So I believe that basketball is a game of deception. So if a guy can jump, he's very athletic, you give him a head fake. Boom, he's gone. You lay it in. So basketball is a little different than other sports. Okay, athleticism is nice, but it's not going to dictate all your wins and losses. And to make my point, if you look at four of the five top NBA MVPs, Shea Butter in OKC with his mid-range game, bumping you, slow motion. Okay, that's old school. If you look at the Joker in Denver, he could barely dunk at 7 foot, slinging that thing behind his head. Looked like he came straight out the YMCA. Killer, straight killer. Looks to pass first before scoring as a big man, which throws everybody off. You got Brunson, the MVP of the finals. He got a tippy-toe jumper and all left. And he seems to have a really good time. He had 45 in the finals. And then you got the boy Luka, who is slow as a slosh, okay? But he seems to be very effective. So it's ironic we talk about athleticism, but all the top players in today's game are skilled. When I came up, everybody had a role, okay? So instead of expecting guys to do everything well, which I think is a little assumptive or a little, you know, kind of crazy to think all five guys are going to be able to do everything well. When I came up, everybody had a role. The point guard was the leader on the floor. He's the one that controlled the tempo. He could speed the game up for fast breaks. He could slow the game down. And everything he did was connected to the coach. And when he did it, it was because he was trying to win. Okay? He was focused on winning. And depending on the strategy of the game and what the other team had, that dictated what the strategy was going to be. So I just recently watched the San Antonio Spurs, and I'm sure you were there, lose a 29-point lead at halftime. They came down and shot 12 three-pointers in a row, took 2-3 seconds off the clock. No, if I'm running the point, I'm going to snatch one of them guys by the jersey. I'm going to say, look, we're trying to win, yo. So let's take 15 seconds off the clock. Let's make sure we get a high percentage shot. Let's just work the clock. The clock is it's on our side. So that's what point guards did when I was coming up. Okay, they controlled, kept things organized, the team. Your shooting guard, in most cases, was going to be your best shooter. Okay, the guy who could fill it up was going to shoot 80, 90% from the line. He was going to shoot 50%, 45 to 50% from the field. And he's coming off picks, taking nice catch and shoot type opportunities. And that was his role. The three man, the swing forward, he was going to do a little bit of everything for you. He's going to, you know, handle the ball a little bit. He's going to shoot. He's going to work the boards. He's normally the most versatile player in this situation. Like when I came up playing, your number four guy was going to be physical. He's going to get the offensive boards. Okay. And he was usually a tough guy, more of an enforcer. You know what I mean? Kind of watched everybody's back in case things got out of control. And lastly was your center. The center was going to post up in the low post, take high percentage shots. Okay, he was going to block shots when they came to the bucket. Okay, and then if anybody just kind of mosey through the lane unnecessarily, he might shoot them bow. You know, don't come through here. This is not for you to, don't do it. So those five pieces fit together to make a team. It's like pieces of an engine, you know what I'm saying? A piston, you got the spark plugs. You put all that together and you got a team. In the case of an engine, you got an engine that moves a car, okay? So those are big differences when you got five guys trying to do everything, and there's no way five guys are going to do everything well. So that's a major, major difference in the game. If you shot a 25-footer when I was coming up and you missed it, coach will put you on the bench. Have a seat, son. You know that sound? That's when they check in the next guy and you go to the bench. So now the game is evolving. We got two different styles, So yeah, some of the older guys are not adjusting to, you know, the new style, but change is constant. So, you know, we're going to try to live with it. Then you get the rise of the three-point play. Three-point play changed the whole game. We went from checkers to chess. And the three-point play creates more points. It's more entertainment value. And the irony of it is a three-point shot, a guy who shoots 33 from three versus 50 from two, is actually still more efficient. So, yes, the three-point shot is a major change. It opened up the lane where guys like Tony Parker could lead the league in points in the paint because the lane is wide open. I can't imagine having that much room to go to the lane, because when I used to go to the lane, I had to go to the bucket like I was Bruce Lee. You know, knees, elbows, kicking folks, bowing folks. And a lane, it's like the sea parted and you just go to the basket. It's unbelievable. You know what I mean? I mean, and defenses, okay, on defense, a guy could dribble from the top of the key all the way to the basket. In the old days, you went and helped, you got back to your man. No one dribbled 15 times to get to the basket. It just didn't happen. In the old days, okay, you didn't switch every pick. Now they switch every pick. Now you got a mismatch. Once again, an advantage for the offense, okay? And no one boxes out. Okay, in the old days, you found your man, boxed him out, ball drop. So those are all defensive deficiencies that actually assist the offense in doing what they do. Three-point play was huge. Now, we went to that physical era with the Knicks and the Detroit Pistons was beating up Mike, you know what I mean? And they were barely scoring 100 points a game. So the NBA had to start making some changes, you know what I mean? No more hand-checking, you know what I'm saying? They had to open the game up because they had to sell tickets. Less than 100 points, it was like sumo wrestlers or something, you know what I mean? That's not attractive basketball. They needed to change the landscape of the game. So that's why the game has evolved. You know, as we were speaking, you know, for the switching on defense, like if I'm paying a guy $30 million a year, I'm not going to let him switch every single time. Sometimes you switch. Sometimes you go through the pick. Sometimes you go over the pick. But that's lazy basketball as far as I'm concerned. Now, Steph Curry has got a 7-footer checking him. I mean, come on. You know? So, like, guys see this. Guys who have basketball intellect, basketball IQ, they see these things and it turns them off, bro. It turns them off. Okay? And then the moving screens. Today, you could be the guy checking you, okay? Your guy screens him. It's not a good screen. He drops to the other side of the guy to screen him again. I mean, moving screens, I can't imagine playing with moving screens. That would have been like heaven on earth. Moving screens. And creates the mismatch. So I love that. You know, I'm identifying these things because a lot of people say, well, we don't get it, okay? No one boxes out. You got the moving screens. And the defenders, you know, it's just so easy for offenses to penetrate to the basket with all these deficiencies on the defensive end. So now we come to the offensive end of the game. So now you got the Euro step. The Euro step. That boy Ginobili brought that thing in from Europe, and it is jazzy. Don't get me wrong, it's sporty. Bap, bap, bap. But in the old days, that was a travel. So once again, the old guys are looking, saying to myself, the rules have been bent just a little bit too much to my satisfaction. I'm a little uncomfortable watching a guy take three steps to the bucket, you know? Then you got the step back. You know, James Harden, you know, he stepped back, stepped to the side, to get space to shoot the shot. Once again, that was a travel back in the day. So a lot of these guys are very uncomfortable watching the game and its changes because that was not allowable, you know, a couple decades ago. But once again, entertainment value. Then the thing that disgusts me is the flopping. This acting like somebody hit you and the over-exaggeration and the falling in the floor and so dramatic and like, you know, and then they do instant replay and you see the guy didn't get touched. It's a lot. It's really difficult to, I mean, to me, that's destroying the integrity of the game. One more rule that's amazing is the fact that you go up to take a shot, and if the guy gets too close to you, they say you're in his landing space, and it's a flagrant foul. Are you kidding me? I mean, the object of defense is to make the offensive player uncomfortable. Now you can go up and take a shot and know that the guy can get nowhere close to you. Once again, it's a little difficult to digest for the other generations. Okay. Dribbling is also, they got the carry. You can take the ball and back down, carry. I mean, that used to be called carrying. Okay. So now you kind of understand. I'm trying to break this down for you so you can see the challenges that some of the other generations have at watching basketball today. And the one that really gets me is the charge. Okay. They actually dribble, and run right into the defensive player, knock him back, and then shoot. That used to be a charge in the old days. And I can't imagine having the Greek Freak or LeBron James at 6'8", 260, running up my chest. I'm trying to get away. He runs over me. I can't breathe. I'm having difficulty breathing. This big man just ran over me. And the referee, foul number 12. Huh? Foul me? Dude, I don't want to say this in front of the camera, but I'd probably be waiting out in the parking lot for him. Obviously, I wouldn't accept that too good. I wouldn't do good with that. So these are all the changes. The charging fouls, the carrying of the ball, the switching on defense, the flopping, the shooting rule, the offensive player leaning into the defense player, and then also just dribbling the air out the ball. You know what I mean? My man Brunson, MVP, I give him all the due respect. But my man can dribble the air out the ball. I mean, he might drop it on the floor 15, 20 times before he shoot. I grew up with Adrian Dantley. He would dribble 5 times and the whole Detroit Pistons team would lose their mind. So, yeah, those are all things to take away from the game, you know what I'm saying? But it is what it is. I say it again. The only thing that's constant in life is change. And let's think about why we change. What is the reason for change? In this country, it's normally money, shekels, dollars. They call it a lot of different things, but everybody know the love of money. So capitalism. Yeah, it's capitalism. Basketball evolved because of money, television, marketing, entertainment value. Team owners need to sell tickets, television packages, sponsorship, merchandising, corporate skyboxes. High scoring games produce highlights. Highlights attract viewers. Viewers attract advertisers. Let's get back to the money. So yeah, it's a little. I know y'all struggling with it, but at the end of the day, it's the same old story. It's the money. It's the money. Offense has become king, and many rules and interpretations have been adjusted to encourage scoring. Many old school fans no longer watch because they believe the game has been changed too much. To them, it feels like basketball that they loved has been replaced with a different version of the sport. We should not hate the old school. We should not disrespect today's players. We should understand change is the only thing that's constant in life. And, you know, it's an old saying, don't hate the player, hate the game. You know what I'm saying? To understand at least how the game has changed. You have to understand that. We must either embrace the change or just relax. You know? We must talk about whether basketball has gained or lost, and perhaps it did a little bit of both. The game has changed, but the culture is still with us. Love it or hate it, the game is just not the same. Yeah, it's tough, and I get it. But, you know, we'll never stop loving this game. We're about to play a song. that fits in with this whole storyline?
This one right here is for the floor generals, the leaders, the past first guards, the ones who knew how to win. Where the old school point guards gone? Yeah. Yeah. Before the highlights and the social media fame, before everybody wanted 30 points a game, there was a point guard running the floor, making everybody better, always wanting more. He knew every player's strength, every weakness too. Knew exactly what each teammate could do. He controlled the tempo, never rushed the play. Made sure the ball found the right hands every day. He wasn't chasing stats, he wasn't chasing shine. His mission was the team crossing that finish line. A perfect assist was worth just as much, because winning championships was the ultimate touch. Where have the old school point guards gone? The leaders that held the whole team strong. Where have the floor generals gone? The ones who made everybody feel like they belong. Where have the old school point guards gone? The game moved on, but their legacy lives on. Where have the floor generals gone? They knew how to win, they knew how to win. He was the coach on the floor every night. Woo! Calling out the sets and keeping everybody right. Talking on defense, diving for loose balls. Taking responsibility whenever his team would fall. Accountable to the coach, accountable to the squad. Never pointing fingers when the journey got hard. Measure success by victories, not fame. Because the name on the front meant more than the name. But don't get it twisted, he could score when needed. When the offense broke down, he competed. Could get a bucket when the pressure got real. But making others better was his greatest skill. But how the old school point guards gone? The leaders that held the whole team strong. Where have the floor generals gone? The ones who made everybody feel like they belong. From the playgrounds of D.C. to Baltimore streets, New York blacktops where the legends would meet. Philadelphia toughness, Chicago pride. Real point guards gave the game its guide. They play with heart, they play with IQ. Made the simple pass when others wouldn't do. Leadership, toughness, sacrifice, and trust. Understanding team success was always a must. Now everybody wants highlights and fame. Everybody wants glory and their name in the game. But somewhere along the road we lost that art. The point guard who played with his head and his heart. Passing is an art. Leadership is a skill. Winning is the ultimate statistic. And the old school point guards, they knew how to win. Yeah, they knew how to win. Where have the old school point guards gone? The leaders that held the whole team strong. Where have the floor generals gone? The blueprint lives on even though they're gone. Where have the old school point guards gone? We still tell their stories when the lights come on. Where have the floor generals gone? They knew how to win, they knew how to win. So here's to the floor generals, the leaders, the past first guards, the extensions of the coach, the ones who understood that leadership matters, that passing is an art, yeah. And that winning is the ultimate statistic. Now excuse me while I put on my North Face bubble jacket. Because this narrative is colder than Minnesota.
It's your boy Penny Green. I'm back at you. I hope you enjoy my song, Old School Point Guard. And then I'm part of the Point Guard fraternity. I take it real personal, you know what I mean? So I was sitting at home watching San Antonio blow a 29-point lead, and I realized there was no leadership on the floor. I called my guy up. He went into the laboratory, and he came out with that song, Old School Point Guard. I hope you enjoyed it. And it had, you know, real meaning to me, because as we discussed tonight, the game has changed. And if I were to review the whole evening's a narrative, the biggest component that's missing on the floor is leadership. Okay. Leadership is the point guard, and everybody doing all five functions. No one takes the role or the initiative to be the leader, the coach on the floor. And so, yeah, I think that song was appropriate for the show and kind of just puts a bow on this show's, you know, narrative. So, yeah, I thought that was hot. I hope you enjoyed it because I enjoyed it. So, yeah, I got a lot of real good reviews on that piece. I dropped it on Reels on Facebook and they seem to be loving it. So, yeah, I needed to share that with everyone. And once again, I thought it was appropriate for the show, you know, as we look at the changes that have taken place to the game. And once again, we know change is constant. The only thing that's constant. So this is your boy, Penny Green, signing off. And let me just say this. For all you guys who got addictions, I'm addicted to winning.
Until next time. Keep on. Where the game lives and the champion lives in you.